Well, we've been talking about the resurrection and trying to sort of get a handle on the biblical information that we have about the resurrection. We first started talking about statements that we saw about the resurrection in the Old Testament. Then we moved to the New Testament. We talked about what Paul said about the resurrection, spent some time on 1 Corinthians 15. And then we started with the Gospels and what we can learn about the resurrection from the Gospel records. We talked a little bit about Jesus' statements when he was here and some of the things that we can learn about resurrection from Jesus' promises about the resurrection. Then we looked at Resurrection Sunday, the day he was actually raised, and all of the things that happened then. And then we talked a little bit about some of the post-resurrection appearances. Now, I think everybody knows, as I've tried to depict here, Jesus spent 40 days with his disciples after he was raised from the dead and before he went back to heaven. So we're going to talk about that period of time, and I call it the teaching period. And then there's the day of his ascension, the day he actually went back to heaven. And then 50 days after the resurrection comes Pentecost. So all of this that we're talking about tonight happened after Resurrection Sunday and before Pentecost in the second chapter of Acts. Now, there are some post-ascension appearances. Two stand out in my mind. The first is the appearance to Stephen as Stephen is being stoned in Acts, the seventh chapter. And then there's the appearance to the Apostle Paul. And we looked at how Paul talked about that appearance. We've talked about five themes, and we're going to try to keep those themes in our view as we talk about the 40-day teaching period. First, resurrection's a bodily reality. I think we all understand how important that is. That was the thing that the Sadducees had trouble with. Was that resurrection for them was just a metaphor. That's the only way that they looked at resurrection. It was not a bodily reality. The Pharisees, on the other hand, were able to accept the bodily reality of the resurrection. Second theme, Jesus is resurrected first. He's the first fruits. And then we get to follow and we will undergo the same kind, if that's a good word, we will undergo a resurrection that is similar to what happened to Jesus. Third theme, the judgment of all men is connected with the return of Jesus and our resurrection. The judgment of all men doesn't happen until all men are raised from the dead, and those that still remain alive and are on that day when Jesus comes again, they will meet the Lord in the air and they will be changed. I don't know how that exactly looks. And then two important points. Jesus' resurrection establishes that he's God. It establishes his lordship, and it is what gives him the right to exercise all power. And then finally, resurrection is used as a metaphor for our converted life. So, any thoughts before we get into the 40 teaching days that Jesus spent with his disciples? Everybody cool up to this point? Okay. Jesus, after he's been raised from the dead, and he has appeared to the apostles on Sunday night, He then appears again 8 days later to the apostles, and Thomas is there this time. Thomas wasn't there the first time that he appeared. This is the record that we have of this is in John, the 20th chapter, and verse 24 through 29. And again, I'll send these slides over to John, and he'll upload them to the website so that you'll have access to these slides. We're not going to read all of these passages. I just want to go through this information very quickly. And you can, when you get home, you can take these outlines and the passages. They're all in here. You can look them up and you can read them at your leisure and spend a little bit more time. So Thomas isn't there when Jesus first appears to the 11 disciples and the two men, at least the 11 disciples and the two men that were on the road to Emmaus. We read about that in Luke 24, verses 34 through 39. Okay. They saw his hands and his feet in Luke 24. They ate with him. He taught them. And then it says that he breathed on them and they received the Holy Spirit. Now, this is different than the ability to work miracles. They were given the ability to work miracles all the way back in the limited commission when Jesus sent them out and he told them that they could work miracles. So they had the ability to work miracles back then. And that ability to work miracles came from the Holy Spirit without doubt. Okay. Then you have Jesus. The record says he breathed on them and they received the Holy Spirit. That's different than just the ability to work miracles. And it's different than what happened on Pentecost when the Holy Spirit came and they spoke in tongues. I don't know exactly what it was. It is mentioned. It's just given as a statement of fact. It really isn't developed more than that. Anybody have other thoughts about this imparting of the Spirit? He breathed on them and they received the Spirit.
Could this be the time when they truly understood that Jesus Christ was actually raised from the dead?
Don't know. But I can see that their belief in that is growing as these events begin to unfold. So, yes, I can see that. You know, certainty about anything is a combination of internal certainty, that's what I have, and the external characteristics of the one that I have confidence in. So you've got the external characteristics, those belong to Jesus. And then there's the internal certainty. And that internal certainty is growing. Maybe that's what a part of this is this growing internal certainty that belongs to each one of the apostles. We're not talking about something that belonged to Jesus. That's external certainty. This is internal certainty. So maybe you're right. Yeah.
Jesus told the apostles that when he left, he would send the comforter.
Right.
And maybe this is just the time
that he does that.
The Holy Spirit is to bring comfort and the clarity and stuff starts.
Lead them into all truth. Yeah. That probably is at least a part of this. Yeah, Bob.
Well, it does describe it now that I read it. In John 20 and verse 22, Jesus says, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, their sins have been forgiven them. If you retain the sins of any, they have been retained. So they at least receive that amount of power from the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, and that's a statement that it parallels a statement that Jesus made to Peter. I say unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I'll build my church. The gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And whatever sins you forgive, I like the reading in the American Standard Translation, have been forgiven in heaven already. So it reminds us that it's up to God to forgive, not me. I could forgive sins against me, but I can't forgive sins against God. Only God can do that. So yeah, that is a part of it. And exactly how that works into it, I'm not sure. Yeah, Bill.
After Jesus' resurrection, didn't he have a different authority or position than he had while he was living as a man?
Well, when you look at Matthew 28, he makes a statement that he's never made before. Now, I don't know if, of course, Jesus was always God. So that complicates it. He was always God. And it may be that he gave up some of the prerogatives of God to come here. I don't know that. But I do know in Matthew 28, he makes a statement that he's never made before. He says, all power is given me in heaven and on earth. Go ye therefore and teach. So the resurrection, if you look at 1 Corinthians 15, plays into Jesus destroying the last enemy. The last enemy that's destroyed is death. So he destroys him then. And that may be a part of it. I just don't know. It's a lot of good thoughts. A lot of good thoughts. And then the last thing that happens is he instructs them to wait in Jerusalem until the Spirit comes. Yeah, Ted.
It seems to be a different interaction with the Holy Spirit than you received in the second chapter of Acts.
Yes.
So whatever Holy Spirit, portion of the Holy Spirit that Jesus breathed on them was different than what was given to them directly by the Holy Spirit.
Yes. Yes, it's different. I don't know exactly how it was different, but it was different. And what that does for me is it reinforces the idea that I can be given the gift of the Spirit and not have all of the parts of the Spirit. Okay? I can have the Spirit and not be able to speak in tongues. That's not an indication that I don't have the Spirit. It's an indication that I'm not an apostle and I wasn't there on the day of Pentecost. But it doesn't deny the personality or the work of the Spirit. So that's what I find so important about this. Yeah, Lenny.
It's interesting to note that God, Jehovah, bred life into Adam. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And Jesus, in the 14th chapter of John, we see that the helper is going to assist his disciples. In the 26th verse of chapter 14, but the helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, he will teach you all things and bring to you remembrance of all that I speak. So you can equate what God did to act.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of these we tend to talk about them as manifestations of the Spirit. All of the different ways that people participated with the Spirit, that it just really encourages me. Yeah. And it's the same Spirit. And that's what Paul says in 1 Corinthians. So the appearance to Thomas is in John 20, beginning at verse 24. Thomas is told about the first appearance. Remember, the apostles, as you would expect, and again, this is just lends credibility to the gospel accounts. They told Thomas about Jesus coming, but he's still incredulous. He doesn't quite know what to do with this. So after 8 days, he appears. Thomas is there this time. And this is the second appearance of Jesus to the apostles. And the disciples are together again. And I don't know exactly whether it was just the apostles or he switches back and forth. As you read through the Gospels, sometimes they're the disciples, sometimes they're the apostles. Was the disciples a larger group than the apostles? Probably. We know there were at least 120 that were there on the day of Pentecost. So the disciple group is bigger than the apostle group. But all of this indicates, and I think this is really important, Jesus wasn't appearing just randomly to people so he could demonstrate that he was still alive. He was demonstrating that he was God. And this is the proof, John 20, verses 30 and 31. And it's a statement that John will make again towards the end of his book. But here in John 20, these things were done so that we would have proof positive, without a question, that Jesus is God. Comments? Yeah, Bill.
The statement that you read from Matthew a couple minutes ago, was that after his resurrection?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Jesus was before he was sent to the cross. He placed himself under God's authority. He didn't use all the power he had. After he was resurrected, he was free to do so.
Yeah, that's why I say that that he may have given up some of the prerogatives of deity to come here and be a man. And that's what Paul says in Philippians, that he, though he was equal with God, he thought that that was not a thing to be held on to, but he emptied himself.
Wait, when Jesus made the statement, do you think that I couldn't call 10,000 angels and my Father would grant that?
Yeah.
He had given up some power. Maybe God withheld some from him while he was in a man's body. But it was not, I can call 10,000 names. My Father was sent.
Interesting. Interesting. And you see the same kind of statement in the temptation. God will send his angels that they would bear you up lest you strike your foot against a stone. So you may be right that Jesus gave up a lot to come here. And if you think about what he had before, it just makes his willingness to give it up so much more impressive. I cannot fathom what he gave up. It's like he was God, and God said, I want you to go talk to dogs now. Not that we're on the level of dogs, but it's, or I want you to go be a worm. You know, it's way more than what we sometimes think it was. The sacrifices that Jesus made were far greater than just the sacrifice on the cross. He made the big sacrifice to decide to come here. So, yeah. Okay. So then he appears to at least seven disciples or seven apostles out at the Sea of Galilee. Okay. They're fishing. Jesus appears. He cooks breakfast for them. We know at least five of them, Peter, Thomas, Nathaniel, James, and John. And John says this is the third appearance to the apostles after his resurrection. So that's why I say the prior one was the second one when he appeared when Thomas was there. That's the second one. This is the third one. And then there's this interesting conundrum at this occasion. The apostles are fishing out in the sea. They're some distance from land, and they saw Jesus on the beach, but they didn't quite know that it was Jesus. They didn't exactly recognize him. And then later here in John 21, at verse 12, it says, nobody durst ask him if it was Jesus, because they knew it was. And again, that makes some sense to me. They may have been so far out onto the sea that they couldn't quite see what was on the beach. And then they got to the beach, and it was like, oh, it's Jesus. It's you. None of them had glasses, because Ben Franklin hadn't made glasses yet. So, you know, who knows? Again, it makes perfect sense that I don't think that they were not able to recognize him because his visage was somehow changed, or their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. In this case, I think it's just a matter of distance. But once they see him, they recognize him this time. There's no question. And I don't, again, I don't know what his physical appearance was like. Remember, he walked through a door, a locked door. But he had substance. Thomas could touch him, okay? He could put his hand inside of his body. So he has substance, but he walked through a locked door. He just appeared in the upper room where they were. And the doors had been locked. So there's something about his physical presence that I'm not sure I understand. Just like there's something about what our bodies will be like when we're raised from the, I don't know exactly what that's like. We'll have substance and be able to walk through solid objects. Okay. And this is where he has that interaction with Peter, specifically about feed my sheep. And Peter must have been a little bit frustrated by this? I get the impression when I read this from that Peter's tone kind of changes. He says, feed my sheep. Do you love me, Peter? And Peter says, yeah. He says, do you love me, Peter? What part of yeah didn't you understand? Do you love me, Peter? And it's like, come on. So again, very understandable. And then you have this question about John. And I find this question instructive because it indicates that there were some things that the apostles didn't understand about the resurrection. Okay. They said the apostle who reclined on your chest at dinner, is he going to die? Jesus says, what difference does it make? And they leap to the conclusion that Jesus said John wasn't going to die. So you've got to be really careful with biblical statements that you don't draw unwarranted conclusions from them. Yeah, Bill.
When this incident of the disciples out on the sea, well, it said after they came to land and Jesus had finished cooking on fire, none of them dared ask who he was. Apparently, they didn't recognize
him. Once they got there, they did.
Well, that was when none of them dared ask, who are you? Because they knew it was him. They would have known already and not needed to ask who he was.
Yeah. Don't know. Don't know. Yeah, Carol.
Sometimes it's like you don't want to be the one to say something just in case it isn't true. You know, it's that human thing that, yes, I know who that person is, but, well, I don't want to put it out there in case I'm wrong. You know, it's that little bit of human bit that we all have.
Yeah. And it yeah, Kim.
I was going to say, when I read this narrative, because I feel like John has written it, writes it as a narrative, it's very linear. And when I read it, I'm impressed with, I think they recognized, realized it's Jesus when he did the miracle. And I mean, these guys were able to do miracles. Why didn't they do a miracle and get all these fish, right?
Yeah.
You know, they that would be a misuse of their power, right? But I mean, I can just imagine that it just kind of was a throwback to when this happened before. Because John looks at Peter right then and says, this is the Lord. That he did this miracle. And this is the Lord. And then they drug all these fish in. And he said, bring those fish to me. And he started cooking me breakfast. Could you imagine Jesus cooking me breakfast? You know, and saying, bring those fish over here. And they're not going to ask. They're not going to question him. Look at what they just saw. So I think that's when the realization came. Okay, it's not just some guy standing there on the beach. He calls out to them. He says, have you caught anything? They're like, oh, we haven't caught anything. He said, well, throw your nets in. They're like, huh, this sounds familiar. He's been here before. So,
yeah.
So I think that's when they knew, and that's probably why he did it, was to demonstrate again his lordship and that he is there with them and who he is.
Yeah. And I'm just dumb enough that I would have been the one who says, who are you? Okay. I go through life not paying very close attention sometimes. And I would be the dummy. And Kim will tell you that that's probably true. I'm the one who would be the dummy.
Jesus is showing them here that I'm still going to take care of you. I'm going to take care of you like the flowers in the field. And it was in the show where it shows that when he first sent them out on the first commission, they had to get to, they weren't supposed to take
anything extra, no extra sandals, no cloak, whatever. We needed to learn to depend 100% on God. And this is God saying, I'm going to provide for you.
Yeah, it could be. You very well may be right. It just doesn't say that. But I take great confidence from the fact that Jesus was, after his resurrection, of the same character that he was before his resurrection. Okay? He has always cared for people. He has always given them what they needed. And after his resurrection, he does that. And so I think it's important to understand he's in heaven now. He still cares for us just as much as he did when he was walking here. His essential character does not change. Maybe his appearance changes. He is now empowered to a greater degree, but his essential character remains the same. Yeah, comment. Anything? Okay. Then Matthew 28. This is toward the, in my thinking, this is toward the end of the 40 days. Jesus commissions the apostles. He's chosen a mountain. He told them, go to this mountain in Galilee, I'll meet you there. Okay, so it's a mountain he chose. I don't know that there's a lot of significance to that. They did two things. They worshiped him and they doubted. And maybe that's the difference between external certainty that leads to worship and internal certainty, which allows for doubt. And I feel like he's got my mind pegged right here. External certainty, there's no question about Jesus. The question is about me. So I feel like the man whose son was ill, he came to Jesus. He said, I believe, help thou my unbelief. And here Jesus claims all power in heaven and on earth. That's verse 18. And we focus on this as the great commission. And yes, it is the sending out of the apostles to do the work that they were going to do. But it's also Jesus saying, here's the basis upon which I send you out. Go everywhere. Remember, the limited commission was just to the Jews. Now Jesus expands it. He says, you go everywhere. And he, of course, he has a plan, Jerusalem, Judea, to the Samaria, and then the uttermost parts of the earth. So it's going to proceed according to his plan, but it's everyone. And it did take something like 10 years for the gospel to reach to the Gentiles with Cornelius. And Peter, of course, preaches to Cornelius. He's the first Gentile convert. Then you had other Gentiles that were hearing the gospel, and thankfully it extended to the whole world, because I'm not Jewish. I'm glad he extended it. Okay. Yeah, Kim.
It wasn't that they were doubting him. I think they were doubting themselves and their commitment to him. Because he answers that. When he says, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. I'm going to be here with you the whole time because you're going to be doing some hard stuff. And secular history tells us that all but one of them was marked for their faith. Every one of them. And we saw before where he told Peter, he asked Peter, do you love me? He was basically, and it says, he was telling him that because of the kind of death that he was going to suffer. And I think that, Peter, as frustrated as I read that he was frustrated too, and hurt by these questions, he needed that. He needed that three times to really drill it in that you really do love me if you're going to be in this for the long haul.
Yeah.
And you have to rely on your commitment. You can't doubt that commitment. So I think that doubting, they worship him, but they doubted. They're like, I don't know if I have what it takes to do this. And he's basically telling them, yes, you do. And I'm going to be with you.
Yeah, that may be I heard or read one man who was talking about this in terms of external certainty and internal certainty. And this may be a step to building that internal certainty. Yeah, Bill.
That's something I never realized before. That he told them, go to all nations, baptizing them in the Father and Son and Holy Spirit. And it took him 10 years before they started teaching the Gentiles.
Well, they had the plan. He also told them, Jerusalem, then Judea, then Samaria, then the uttermost parts of the earth. It was an organized plan. And yeah, it took 10 years. Yeah. Roughly 10 years.
A whole lot of miracles.
I'm sorry? And a whole lot of miracles and a whole lot of teaching and a whole lot of the Jews opposing it and all kinds of things that you kind of read about in the first 8 chapters of the book of Acts. Okay. Yeah.
Before you start something, you have doubts because you haven't done it. Even if you don't doubt what he's asking you to do, you doubt, well, can I do it? Will I fail? What does he want me to do? I mean, will I recognize when he's talking to me? Will I recognize when he's directing me? I mean, starting something new is difficult for everybody in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is so very believable. This is not somehow this, you know, this story of Peter who encounters Jesus and all of a sudden he has great strength and he never fails. This is a lot more believable than that. Okay. So then he goes out with the apostles out to Bethany. This is an appearance that's recorded not in the Gospels. It's still in this 40-day period, but it's an appearance that happens in Acts 1, verses 2 through 4. So this is where he gives them instruction to wait in Jerusalem till you be endued with power. Now, remember, they've already experienced some of the Holy Spirit. But he says, wait in Jerusalem. He gives them some more information about the kingdom. And then they ask this question that demonstrates that they still don't quite understand everything. They ask him if this is the time when he's going to restore the kingdom to Israel. They probably had a mistaken notion about the kingdom and about its nature. And they were thinking that Jesus was going to overthrow the Roman Empire. He was going to free them from the oppression and that he would set up the Davidic kingdom again. They kind of missed the point that I don't have to overthrow the Roman Empire to set up my kingdom. My kingdom is in you. And he accomplished that. And then, just to kind of add, there were some other events during the 40 days of teaching that we don't know very much about. Paul talks about them in 1 Corinthians 15. Remember, he said he appeared to over 500 brethren at once. I don't find that described anywhere. I just know it happened. Okay. And what's interesting about it in 1 Corinthians 15 is Paul says a lot of those folks that saw him, they're still alive. If you want to know about whether Jesus was raised from the dead, go ask them. They'll tell you. It's not just us 12 guys who are telling you about Jesus being raised from the dead. He appeared to 500 people at once. This is not mass hallucination. They saw it. And it's not just a vision. Now, you might say that when Jesus appeared to Stephen in Acts 7, that that was a vision that Stephen had. Kind of like Peter had that vision about the sheet being let down. There probably wasn't a physical sheet that came down, but it was, he saw this in a vision. This is not a vision. That's not the way it's described. This is a reality. And then he says he appeared to James, and I think that's, I think this is James, the brother of Jesus. It's not James the apostle. We have some difficulty with James because it's such a common name. And sometimes you have trouble figuring out who he's talking about when he says James. He doesn't give the last name. He just says James. And so it can get a little confusing there. 1 Corinthians 15 at verse 7. So there are multiple appearances in this 40-day period. And there are even some appearances that are after that 40-day period, after Jesus has gone back to heaven. That's why Paul describes his own vision of Jesus, his own appearance of Jesus on the Damascus Road. He says, I was one born out of due time. I was beyond the time that this should have. I saw Jesus after he'd gone back to heaven. Okay. Comments, questions? Well, that finishes the Gospels, the Gospel accounts. Anybody at home? I didn't mean to shortchange you. You know, this is the Corinthian model. You just have to speak up. Don't feel bad about interrupting. So if you have a comment, just speak up. Anybody. And I don't always see the comments that people have. So you just have to kind of shout out. Yeah, Bill, you get the last comment tonight.
In the beginning of the Jesus ministry, he appointed the 12 apostles. And then when one of them died, the apostles...
he committed suicide. Yeah, okay.
When the apostles chose another one, they chose him from those that had always walked with them in Jesus. Paul was completely outside of that. He'd not only not walked with them, he'd try to kill them.
Yeah.
And God saw something so special in him. He said, he's going to be my minister. And Paul never forgot. I don't think he ever forgot how much he was forgiven.
Yeah. And, you know, there is a degree to which this is true of every one of us. Think about how special you are that God said, I'm going to let Bill be a new man. He's going to submit to killing the old man at baptism, and I'm going to make him a new man, and I've got some works that I want him to do. That's why he did that. That I think in many ways causes us to think about ourselves in a completely different light. God chose you because he has a work he wants you to do. And just like the apostles, do it. So if you want to put on Christ, if you understand all of that, we'll help you do that. If you've not really understood that Jesus created you for good works, then understand it and act on it and return to God. Give him the glory, because that's where it belongs.